to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. Next month, admission to the Institute of American Indian Arts, Museum of Contemporary Native Arts, comes at no cost. The gift to patrons recognizes a major recent development for the museum, a $3 million unrestricted donation from billionaire Mackenzie Scott and her husband. The museum is one of more than 280 similar donations by Scott to, in her words, help put people struggling against inequities on the center stage. More on this right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native people held a rally and marched to the convention center in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Tuesday to show support for tribal sovereignty and object to a forum which did not include tribal leaders on the U.S. Supreme Court's decision on McGirt. Last July, the Supreme Court affirmed the Muscogee Reservation and provided jurisdictional clarity. Muscogee media streamed parts of Tuesday's rally live on Facebook.
We need to be able to recognize all parts of this and not just pick and choose the parts that we want to get out there. The federal government has the authority to prosecute the people. The tribes have the authority to prosecute, and we can handle our own. And we are a sovereign nation.
The forum featured district attorneys, law enforcement, and Governor Kevin Stitt. Tribal leaders say they were not formally invited to participate. Statements from the Muscogee and Cherokee Nations expressed frustrations and lack of collaboration with the state since the court decision, and the tribes are looking to work with local, state, and federal partners. 2 News Oklahoma reports the contentious forum ended early as Native people turned out and expressed their frustrations to the governor. The Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation in Washington declared a state of emergency Tuesday due to uncontrolled fires. The reservation is shut down to the public and industrial activities are halted. The fire Tuesday morning had burned 10,000 acres, homes, and buildings. According to a press release, the fire danger is extreme, with high temperatures reaching 105 degrees. Wind gusts in the forecast this week may also increase the fire danger. All tribal government operations were closed Tuesday as tribal leaders assessed the situation. A school on the Crow Reservation is under renovation to better serve the community. Yellowstone Public Radio's Taylor Stagner has more about the importance of the small reservation school.
Wyola School on the Crow Reservation is the town's only school, has the only playground, and is the only place to grab a quick bite to eat because the cafeteria offers free food to community members. There are 90 students during the school year, K through the 8th grade. Principal and Superintendent Christy Wright says she pushes the small school to be forward-thinking as the administration gets ready to break ground on new facilities next month.
We have a huge robotics program, so those are the things that we're very much wanting our kids to get into, and especially our girls.
A federal grant will fund renovations of the main building, built in the 1950s, and the small temporary pods that were placed outside the main structure in the 1970s will be torn down and replaced with new pods with STEM facilities and outdoor accommodations.
And the other thing that's going to be cool is each pod will have an outdoor learning space where they can walk out of the classroom directly and be in that little space that they're going to have designated. And we're really hoping that's more of a cultural space so we can do some of our Crow cultural activities in there and really hone in on some of the things that nature has to offer when we go outside.
Wright says the new pods would act like tiny community centers to give students more personal time with instructors and with each other. For National Native News, I'm Taylor Stagner.
The St. Regis Mohawk Tribal Council increased the tribal minimum wage for government employees to a little more than $15. The wage is a nearly $2.50 increase of the previous rate. It will apply to all tribal government employees and went into effect this week. The tribe is expected to increase the minimum wage for workers at the casino resort in September. Tribal leaders say the wage increase is an effort to help with the well-being and livelihood of all their employees. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
This reminder to get your COVID-19 vaccination is provided by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, who support this show. Info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands, Ashewetui. The Institute of American Indian Arts, Museum of Contemporary Native Arts, is looking ahead to a bright future thanks to a sudden windfall. Billionaire Mackenzie Scott counts the museum in Santa Fe, New Mexico, as one of 286 institutions that are agents of change for underserved communities. Scott and her husband are giving the museum $3 million with no strings attached. That's on top of another grant from the Ford Foundation earlier this year. And Scott donated $5 million to IAIA last year. Today, we're going to get a glimpse of what the museum is all about, its focus, and its role in the art world. And we'll also learn what they have planned with the sudden influx of funds and how this might elevate the profile of this museum that is devoted to contemporary Native art. And you can join the conversation as well. Have you visited the museum? Have you always wanted to? You can get in on the discussion by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And before we move forward, note of disclosure, IAIA is a financial underwriter for our parent company, Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. And with that, we kick into the discussion. Joining us today from Santa Fe, New Mexico is Patsy Phillips. She is the director of the IAIA Museum of Contemporary Native Arts, and she's a member of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma. Our pleasure to have her here with us. Patsy, welcome to Native America Calling.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here. Love your show.
Well, Patsy, we appreciate you being on the line. And I guess some congratulations are in order. Being able to receive funds like this maybe were things you only dreamed about. And here we go, dreams coming true. Patsy, any thoughts about what it means to be a recipient of these funds? And of course, with no strings attached, what does that open up for the museum?
Yeah, thank you, Tara. I first want to acknowledge the Pueblo land, honor and acknowledge the Pueblo people in the area. And in regards to the Mackenzie Scott gift, well, first of all, I am starting now my 14th year as the museum director. And we have a limited budget. We generally get an increase for COLA, cost of living, each year, but generally we work within the same budget every year. So, and we raise funds from, we get significant funds from like the Andy Warhol Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and others, Art Bridges. So to get these telephone calls, which is essentially what they were when the Ford Foundation called us about honoring us as one of America's cultural treasures, and wanting to give us $1.6 million was just beyond exciting. And I couldn't believe it. And anyway, that came to be, and they're going to give us $400,000 over 4 years, so we can plan over the next 4 years. And then I get a call from Mackenzie Scott's team, and they want to give us $3 million. So now we have $4.6 million, and it's just almost not comprehensible, just because we have never had these kinds of funds as the museum. And we've had various needs, and we get support from the Institute of American Indian Arts. Our facility is about almost 100 years old. So periodically, we have facility needs, and the Institute supports those additional costs. But to really be able to plan, and we do have some facility costs that we need to now put some of this money for towards. So now we can really think about our future, but not just our future here at the museum. We also want to think about the field and how we can affect the field going forward and how we can contribute to Indigenous arts nationally, but also internationally, our work is. So what we're saying is now we can dream. We can really dream, and we can look at, we know the needs of the field, and so now we can start planning some programming towards those needs. But this is what we're currently doing. We have set the money aside, and the Mackenzie Scott's money, and we are going to do some strategic planning in the fall. And there's a former foundation board member of IAI who does this kind of strategic planning. So she really knows who we are. She knows IAI, she knows the museum. And I'm pretty sure she's going to come in the fall and help us do some strategic planning. So we're not just starting to spend the money and do whatever, but we're really going to look to our future and see where our needs are.
Sure. And Patsy, just thinking of how the funds coming from Mackenzie Scott, it's pretty interesting just reading the story and the different folks who were awarded or institutions and places that were awarded some of these funds. A lot of it comes from wanting to help change makers or people who are underserved in their communities or in their efforts. And what are your thoughts that it caught the attention of this philanthropist and for these reasons, your thoughts?
Well, one of the things that we've been doing exceptional work in Santa Fe, and long before I got here, the previous directors and the staff, they were doing really great work. And we really showcase Native America. We show what's going on in communities, and the artists create work in response. And so we have been getting national attention for a long time now, but mostly more recently. And USA Today, Reader's Choice, recognized the museum as the third best art museum in the country. And we rated above, for example, the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, Art Bridges, the Art Institute of Chicago. So we've been getting this attention. We don't apply for this attention. We don't, write proposals or anything like that to get it. But we've just been getting this kind of attention. And I think it says a lot to people in the Native art world, people everywhere, but people in the Native art world talk, right? And foundations have been funding us. Major foundations have been funding us now for a number of years. And all the foundations talk, too. So I think Mackenzie Scott, she has a research team. And whenever they called me, basically they said, we've heard about your museum. We've heard about all the good work you're doing. And we want to give this to you. And so I think it's all part of this movement at looking at other, if you will, BIPOC, Black Indigenous People of Color organizations. And all of these organizations are doing excellent work. And one of the shifts that I'm seeing in the foundation world is, and the Ford Foundation is heading this up, and that is giving unrestricted funds. So in the past, you write a proposal, you have a specific project, and they fund it or they don't fund it. And that's just typical the funding world. Well, what Ford came to us, they said, we want to give you unrestricted funds so you could use it for operating dollars. Because if you don't have operating dollars, then you can't fund these projects. So that's the movement not all foundations are doing that, but that is the shift that's starting to happen. And having been in the field for decades now and also always fundraising, this is so exceptional. And so for them to identify the IAI Museum of Contemporary Native Arts, a small museum in Santa Fe, and recognize the work that we're doing is just tremendous. And I can't, as the director, I will say, I'm getting calls from all over the country. And I'm getting various calls asking how we got the money, for example, but also about the work. They want to know more about the work we're doing. They're looking to us to recommend potential native board members of their organizations, just various calls I'm getting. So it's huge. It's really brought the museum to national attention.
Sure. And thinking in terms of philanthropy and, you know, the things that are going on in our tribal communities, especially the arts, really big, really important, a part of who we are, a part of our foundations. And so thinking about more Native people entering into this space where people who are in philanthropy are considering what is going on in our nations, especially in the art world. And for you, Patsy, any thoughts to just people who are starting to understand that maybe this is a place to start contributing to our Native nations and our Native efforts?
Oh my God, it's tremendous. There have been some other foundations I would just like to mention, because I think they're doing great work in supporting training Native Americans. One is the Mellon Foundation, and they for a while have been establishing fellowships, for example, and really supporting Native artists and museologists to get more involved in the field. Also, the Cargill Foundation, both of those foundations have funded IAI significantly. And so I think what's happened is the shift that is currently going on is that these foundations can apply money towards these different kinds of programs. And that really is where we're going to start, where we're seeing, I'm not going to say start because we've been seeing it now for a while. For example, the training of young curators and Native young curators and opportunities for them. So we're starting to see a change and how foundations, the other thing that is really a big deal that's been going on for a while is they're going to Native organizations and they're saying, what are your needs? And so that's what the Mellon Foundation has done across the country, really. What does the field need? And so now they're providing opportunities. And these opportunities, of course, are for everybody, tribal, you know, from different tribal communities. The big thing is to get the word out and then provide more opportunities once we get the word out to these different tribal communities.
And just understanding that some of this is going towards Native art, what are your thoughts on that? Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number to join us, and we'll learn more about this museum and some of the efforts they have to support contemporary Indigenous art. If you'd like to share something, we sure hope you'll dial in. Phone lines are open right now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Go ahead, dial in. We're ready for your call. The climbing number of unmarked graves discovered at Canadian schools that once housed Indigenous children is prompting grief and outrage. One First Nation chief referred to it as mass murder. We'll get updates on the situation and find out what solutions are possible. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we are checking in with the IAIA Museum of Contemporary Native Arts in Santa Fe. And if you would like to join this conversation, we sure hope you'll dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. With us on the line today is the director of the museum, Patsy Phillips, who joins us today out of Santa Fe, New Mexico. And she's also a member of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma. And Patsy, before we get to the history of the museum, one more thing that really stood out as I was reading about some of the monies that are coming to the museum, some of them are based on sharing wealth. And to just hear about why certain people were awarded money from the Mackenzie Scott gift, it's part of sharing wealth. And how does that align with what you understand is our obligation as Native people to share the wealth?
Yeah, thank you. That's a very good question. So What we do at the museum is we provide opportunities in many different ways for Native artists and also Native museum professionals. And one of the ways that we're sharing the wealth right now is the month of August. We're going to invite people to come to the museum free the whole month of August, and they can come to any of our programming or see all of our exhibitions. So that is one gift that we're giving. A gift to us is a gift to you. And then we're working on developing other ways, but we provide, for example, we have a social engagement residency that provides an opportunity for artists to come here from around the country, and then they choose their own community in Santa Fe. It might be IAIA students, or it might be a music school, Native music school, various different opportunities, and they work with them, and we engage those communities in the museum, and then we provide opportunities for artists. So there are just many different ways that we can and do reach out. But part of the strategic planning is, what more ways can we do it than we have? And so there's just so many different opportunities out there.
And so we go to this word, these words, contemporary Native art. This is what the museum is dedicated to. Tell me exactly what that means, and what is different than other places where you see Indigenous art.
Okay, so the museum is, the Institute of American Indian Arts is the umbrella organization, and we are the Museum of Contemporary Native Arts that falls within the Institute of American Indian Arts. And IAI is the founding organization for contemporary Indigenous arts. And IAI was founded in 1962. And that is typically, historically, when museums, non-Native museums, have identified the shift from modern art to contemporary. And IAI still recognizes that date because we are the founding institution. And the museum was established in 1972. And so we are just currently developing a research center so that scholars can come here and research. But your question is really a good one, and many people ask that. And so one of our starting points is since 1962. But the other is the kinds of materials artists use, the different media that they use, for example. And a good part of the art that's being creative looks at their communities and what is going on in their communities, and then they make work in response to that. So that is really the shift from basic historic or traditional arts to contemporary. There are very good museums in the country that collect both traditional and contemporary, but where we set ourselves apart completely is that we're the only museum that collects only contemporary, and those are the works that we show here, and it's also the type of programming we do. And I'll just give one example. I think this is an excellent example, and our chief curator's on the phone, so she'll talk more about it. But we're looking at Indigenous communities affected by uranium mining and what kind of art is being created from those communities. So we have looked at, and we have gone and met with the Inuit of Greenland. They have the current threat of uranium mining on their land. And so the artists are creating their responses to if that were to happen. And then we're going to show that work here this summer. And then Australia's Aboriginals, they currently have uranium mining. And so the work that they're creating in response to how that's affecting their lives, which is tremendous. And then, of course, we're working with the Navajo, who have a history and also a current threat of uranium mining again. And Canadian communities and also a couple of other communities. I just heard yesterday we have an artist coming from Tahiti, I believe, and it's an Indigenous artist. So we work only with Indigenous artists. But anyway, we're going to have this show that will open this summer, and it's a good example of what's contemporary. So they're all using different materials. They're all addressing current issues in their reservations or where they live and what's happening to them today. Does that make sense?
Sure, it does. And you know what? We mentioned her, so let's bring her in. We now turn to Manuela, well-off men, who joins us also out of Santa Fe, New Mexico. She is a chief curator of the IAIA, Museum of Contemporary Native Arts. Our pleasure to have her here with us today. Manuela, welcome. And please continue more about what's coming up there at MOCNA.
Yeah, good morning to you and to your listeners. Yeah, Patsy mentioned our upcoming summer show, Exposure on Native Art and Political Ecology. The exhibition will open on August 20th. There will be public reception, and we will include over 30 artists from throughout the world, indigenous artists, contemporary artists, and they, like Patsy mentioned, will their work shows their responses to uranium mining, nuclear exposure in general, nuclear accidents. So I was always intrigued how artists, contemporary Native artists, respond to issues like that. And this was a great opportunity for MOCNA really to showcase international indigenous artists and their work. So we have artists from Greenland, from Australia, from Japan, from Canada, and of course from the US. And it's a group show in our main gallery and also adjacent galleries. So it's really a very large exhibition for MOCNA standards, and it will travel. So we have about three venues right now, and there will be an exhibition catalog accompanying this exhibition. And we will also offer public programs, especially during Santa Fe Indian Market Days.
And we know that it's definitely a big time for art there in the city of Santa Fe. And Manuela, can you describe some of the pieces that are going to be on display and maybe any stories that go with them?
Yeah, sure. So one of the main works is definitely an installation piece by an artist collective from Australia. There are some 20 artists who worked together as a collaboration on this installation piece. It consists of 550 suspended spears that were hand-carved, hand-produced by artists, and 27 wooden bowls underneath. So these spears are installed in a way that they represent an atomic bomb explosion inside of this cluster of 550 spears is a bright light. And this installation talks about how there were atomic bomb tests conducted in South Australia between 1953 and 1963. So this work also talks about not only this bright light, this enormous explosion and the effects on especially Aboriginals, but it also talks about the forced removal of tribes because of these atomic bomb tests. So what happened was the British government approached the Australian Prime Minister, and he authorized these atomic bomb tests. There were over 100 throughout the years. He authorized it without asking for permission, without consulting with Aboriginal tribes who were affected by these bomb tests. So even today, tribal members talk about the effects of these tests on tribal members. And those effects are really severe. So we are talking about miscarriages, cancer, lung disease. So many tribal members actually died because of these atomic bomb tests. And this is definitely one of the largest installation pieces. We have another really interesting sculpture, a metal sculpture created by a Japanese artist. He's a member of the Ainu tribe in Japan. He lives in Hokkaido, and his name is Kohi Fuhito. And he uses traditional Ainu symbols. It's kind of like a spiral with thorns around the spiral, and created this large metal sculpture, and he talks about the effects of the Fukushima nuclear power plant disaster. So that's this year's the 10th anniversary of this devastating nuclear disaster in Fukushima. And he talks about how he and also other citizens in Hokkaido were really scared, especially the contaminated winds blowing from Fukushima inland, and not knowing what these contaminated winds will do to tribal members and their families. So with many of these artworks, we have personal stories attached to them. Another Australian artist, he's actually the best-known artist working in glass in Australia. She created glass plums. So she uses traditional foods and recreates them in glass. But then when you look closer, these they're actually desert plums. They are damaged. And so she uses traditional foods as symbol for the human body and talks about how the radioactivity still has an effect on the health of many tribal members.
And so you have definitely touched on some really important issues and things that we've even covered in our program, and major questions that get asked of the effect on the lands and how it affects the people. And to be able to have this kind of platform to talk about really important issues, I think is something very special of art, and especially the emotions that can get expressed through a piece of work. And Patsy, I want to turn to you and just, you know, hearing this and thinking about how this is really telling our story of Native people who are alive today and what they're facing, and in many places not facing good things. What is your thought that art is communicating things like this?
That's contemporary art, or just what you just said. And it's important to bring these issues to attention, because basically Indigenous peoples have been living, I mean, the Navajo, really, and the Aboriginals of Australia, they've been living with this for a long time. And even though they have quit mining uranium on the Navajo land, they still suffer the effects of uranium mining. And at the time, in the 50s and the 60s, Hogans, which is the traditional home of the Navajo, they were building their hogans out of tailings from the mines. So, but that still affects them today, because these mines, they seep these gases, and people have cancer and all kinds of issues, that, like Manuela was saying. So one of the things, and I do think this is why we've come to national attention, this is only one exhibit we're telling you about. Most of our exhibits address what is going on in Indian country. What are Native people suffering today? And so I think that's what contemporary art can do. And we do have labels. I mean, there's the argument you don't use labels, but we do use labels, and we describe, for example, what Manuela was saying about the spear piece. So we'll explain that so that people really become aware of these issues that Indigenous peoples face. And I was having a conversation recently with somebody, and they were asking, well, we need uranium mining. Well, we don't need to do it on Indian land. Why don't we do it somewhere else? But, you know, that's what governments of countries have chosen, is to do it on Indigenous lands. So that's what we're doing. We also have a catalog, and that catalog will live in perpetuity, and it will travel also. We hope to sell widely this catalog. It's really going to be exceptional. It's going to tell the stories of Indigenous peoples. So that's what art can do, and that is what we at MOGNA have been doing now for a long time, is telling different stories of what's happening.
Well, thank you for that, Patsy. Also, Manuela, thank you both for being here, teaching us a little bit about what is going on there at MOGNA. And maybe there are folks who have visited. What do you think of this upcoming exhibit that is bringing important issues forward? You can share your thoughts with us. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And one big question that is connected to all of this is the power of art. How powerful is art when you are speaking of who we are as Indigenous people today? Maybe you're an artist and you have some thoughts to share. Go ahead and give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And coming up after the break, we are going to meet an artist who has some thoughts on all of this. We'll hear about their work as well as their hopes for having a space like this. If there's anything you want to share, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And maybe there is something similar in your community, or this is your big dream to have something like this right there in the center of your own tribal nation. You can dream big with us today. Share your big ideas. Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And we know that art is important in terms of who we are as Native people. Maybe you have the importance or understand that importance that artists play in keeping culture alive. What about language? You can share thoughts on that too. We look forward to anything you'd like to bring to this conversation. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And if you are a Native artist and some of your work has been shown at this place, and you have some thoughts about what it means to have a dialogue going about issues that are important to our Native nations, we sure hope you'll dial in too. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to hearing your thoughts and hearing more about the importance of our Indigenous nations through the world of art. We'll continue to go into this conversation, learn more about what is happening at the Museum of Contemporary Native Arts. That's all coming up. Hang tight.
Are you a Native American entrepreneur? Have a business solution for an issue like COVID recovery or green energy? The Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program is a federal program helping private lenders make the business loan you need. They support most businesses, whether starting up or expanding. Information available by emailing dci@bia.gov. That's dci@bia.gov. The Division of Capital Investment supports this show.
Thanks for tuning in today, and there is still time to join our discussion today about the IAIA, Museum of Contemporary Native Arts. And they are celebrating a major gift by the world's third richest woman, among others. Other milestones going on, support for this place that houses contemporary Native art. Any thoughts? Again, you're welcome to join us. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We're going to stay in Santa Fe for our next guest who is joining us today on the line. On the line today with us is Linda Lomahaftiwa, and she is a painter, printmaker, and mixed media artist, and her work is currently on exhibit there at the museum. And Linda is Hopi and Choctaw. Our pleasure to have her here with us. Welcome to Native America Calling, Linda.
Thank you, Halito. Thank you for inviting me to be on the show. Yes, my work is currently on exhibit. I have a retrospective show at the Mokna Museum. I was one of the first artists, or one of the first students to attend IAIA back in 1962, and I've been doing my art ever since. So I do have my background, my BFA and MFA from the San Francisco Art Institute, and then I came back to teach at IAIA for 40 years and recently retired in 2017.
Wow, and quite a journey. And so, Linda, tell us a little bit about what is currently being exhibited and, of course, the name of the exhibit that it falls under.
Yeah, the name of the exhibit is The Moving Land, 60 years plus of my art, and again, it's a retrospective exhibit curated by Laura Evans, and it shows my journey of, you know, again, since I started IAIA in 1962, so I started painting my last year of high school, and the exhibit starts with, you know, as you follow through, it starts with my high school work, and then it goes into when I was a student. student in San Francisco, and then when I came back to New Mexico or Santa Fe, and then all the basically it's about landscapes, so the changing of landscapes, and in an abstract form. So all the work is, you can see the shifting, the changing of colors, the shapes. And, you know, I think about those kind of things, too, the like climate change and all those things when I'm doing my work. So I address those kind of issues as I'm working. I don't always talk about it, but that's what I'm thinking when I do my work as well.
Mm-hmm. And so, Linda, describe some of the pieces for us.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, very contemporary, again. At the beginning, when I first started painting, like I said, in my high school days, everything was really abstract expressionist. Just, I was learning about, you know, mixing colors, and so it was just, you know, expression of color and textures, and that's where the mixed media comes in. We were exploring different ways of creating texture, and then painting, you know, along with it, or adding paint to it. So it creates a surface texture on the canvas. Let's see. Then in San Francisco, the colors become brighter, and the shapes are more bolder, I guess you would say, really colorful. And that was during the 60s, so that was during the hippie days. And, you know, there's a lot of posters of the band groups that were going on, and different things, you know, the Vietnam War and things like that were going on in San Francisco.
And so what you're communicating through these different images definitely tells a legacy. A story of a legacy. And Linda, being able to have a place that accepts this kind of work, tell me a little bit about that. Is that something unique? Has it always been this way to have a place that says we accept that as Native art?
Yeah, all the years that I have been doing my work and exhibiting in different shows that I have had or been in, group shows, because the work is so contemporary, people don't really understand. They expect to see, the traditional Indian on a horseback and, you know, that kind of thing. And so when we started doing contemporary work, people didn't recognize, didn't understand, and they would say things like, that's not Indian art, you know, because they didn't understand, you know, we were speaking a different voice.
And what did that do, hearing those kind of things?
Well, I think it just kind of makes you think about how you can use that to express yourself and explain, you know, what you're doing with the work. And because a lot of work now is really still, you know, abstract, and a lot of it is really conceptual. You have to, you know, think about what you're looking at and try and figure out, you know, what are they trying to say with this piece? If it's just a piece of wire hanging down or something, you know, it means something. So you have to think about it. It makes you think. And I'm anxious to see this next exhibit that's going to be coming up. It sounds really interesting.
Certainly. And you know what? We got a caller on the line. Let's go ahead and go to the phone lines. If you want to join us, you got to dial fast. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Gordon is on the line in Red Lake, Minnesota, tuned in on KOJB. Gordon, thanks for reaching out. Go ahead. You're on air.
Yeah, I attended IAIA in the mid-60s. And after I got out of the service, I went back in 72 and 73. And I got to meet a lot of the artists who made contemporary Native American art when the museum used to be on the campus at the school. And there ain't a whole lot of us left alive that are still practicing our art from that era. And if it wasn't for that group of people, there wouldn't even be an IAIA museum. So I was just thinking, whatever is left of IAIA from that era, I think they deserve to some time somewhere in this museum to be able to have some kind of show or talk, and we could discuss how all the camaraderie we had at that school. We were always in each other's studios and sharing ideas. And it was a totally different kind of school that ever existed in the United States or in the federal boarding school program, which it was when I first got there. We had to make our beds and do our details and all that stuff also. So I just wanted to say there, you know, I'm 70 years old, and Linda's a classmate of mine, and I'm real happy to hear that they're showing her work from when she was in San Francisco. So it's pretty cool that this institution is being recognized at the level it is, and it's been a long time coming, and I sure hope that we can get a few of us old guys together and the old gals together so we could sit and tell these stories, because we're all going away. And I think it's real important. And thank you so much, and good work, Linda, and good luck.
Thank you for that, Gordon. Linda, anything you want to tell Gordon?
I'm sorry?
Anything you want to share with Gordon after hearing his thoughts and enthusiasm for this actually existing and the good old days? Anything you want to share?
Oh, I'm glad to hear from you, Gordon. Yeah, he's right. You know, there's not too many of us left there from this era that we do need to have an exhibit that where we can sit around and talk, because part of, you know, when I've been at the museum to talk to some people about my work, you know, you talk about the history of the school. I mean, you know, I end up talking about the history of the school, the evolution of the Native art movement, and where you know how it started and how it's moved, and then again, not too many of us are left that can talk about our work. Of course, there's a lot of young ones coming up, and they're all good too. So it's but they need to hear what we have.
Sure. And speaking of passing on that baton, Linda, is there anything you'd like to share with our listening audience? Maybe there are some young people out there. Maybe there are some people who are just coming into their art as they become elders. You know, it ranges different ages of people who turn to art, but people who are coming into it and feel the need to express themselves in what is termed as contemporary forms. Anything you want to share with them about keeping forward and going and not letting things bog you down of hearing that's not Native art?
Yeah, that's the thing. Just like you said, you know, don't be afraid. Just do your work, do the work, and express what, you know, do it any way you can. And as you keep working, then eventually you start to figure out, you know, different ways of saying what you're trying to say. So don't be afraid and just keep going with it, and don't even worry about, you know, those kind of comments like that's not Indian art, you know, because you're going to get a lot of support from other Native artists, and that's what keeps us all going. Support from other Native artists, from people in the community, Native people in the community, and relatives, our family.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that, and congrats on your work, too. And Patsy Phillips is here with us. Manuela Well-Off Man is also here, too, both with Mokna there in Santa Fe. And Patsy, as we get ready to wrap things up, of course, you know, thinking of former students, thinking of students who are in the Institute now, or students who are connecting from an international level, or just people who are artists. Anything you want to share about just making sure that all these artists truly do have a space there at Mokna?
Yes, thank you for this opportunity. I wanted to tell Gordon that we have a gathering every year, Friday of Indian Market, where our alum gather. We have a luncheon at the museum, and they get together and talk. And it started a number of years ago with some of the elderly who have now passed. But they typically gather every Friday of Indian Market. So hopefully you can join us, Gordon. The other thing is, We our collection is mostly student, alum, and staff and faculty. I mean, we're collecting again Indigenous art, but we do collect alum work, for example. We especially collect recent student work. We also have an annual, two annual BFA shows, so the graduating seniors can show in the museum. It's really a good opportunity for them to showcase their work. And we regularly include alum in our exhibitions. It would be impossible not to, because there's so many important alum out there. And so when we have a show on a topic, we regularly include alum. And there are also opportunities, if people want to visit our website, to propose exhibitions. And we always consider every proposal we receive. So there are many opportunities here.
Indeed. And as we get ready to wrap up, is there anything else you want to let people know about what goes on there at the Museum of Contemporary Native Arts, Patsy?
Yes, thank you so much for this opportunity. So I wanted to say that next year, 2022, IAI will celebrate 60 years, and the museum will celebrate 50 years. And we have a huge committee that's working on programming, exhibitions, everything regarding both the school. They'll be both at the school and at the museum. So visit our website. We also have an alumni association manager who will be sending out information, who sends out information regularly. So next year is a big year. We're going to have many different celebrations and maybe a couple across the country to include other alum and members around the U.S. So we have a lot of activities planned or planning. We're planning.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And Patsy, as we get ready to wrap, and thank you for sharing context and a little bit of what's going on, do you have any encouragement for Native artists who are out there who may be exhibiting in the future?
Absolutely. We are seeing a shift across the country. We're seeing a shift that museums are now showing, and major museums. It's not a huge shift, but we are starting to see it. So the Whitney, for example, has recently shown in the last few years contemporary Indigenous art. And I just want to encourage people to think big and not just markets, but there's so many different opportunities. And there's different training programs to be able to learn about these different possibilities across the country. And so, I just encourage people to reach out and also reach out to us. We regularly get calls. How can we show at your museum? And as I said before, on our website, there's an application process that we encourage people to visit.
And Patsy, any words to people out there, maybe even some of our students who are toying around with the idea of learning about getting degrees in understanding museums, curation, anything quick on that?
Yes. Okay. So IAI has many different programs. One is museum studies. And so I encourage people to look at IAI's website. We have somatic arts, creative writing, Indigenous studies, museum studies, performing arts, studio arts. And you can get those in certificates, or you can get them MFA. We have a couple of MFA programs, associate. So I encourage people to reach out to museums and possibly intern at a museum. It's one way you can get into the door.
Great advice to live by. Boy, internships, they can lead to a lot of things. Well, we got to wrap things up. Thank you to everybody we heard from today. Patsy Phillips, Manuela, Well Off Men, as well as Linda Lomahaftiwa. Also, we hope you'll join us again tomorrow, because we're going to do this again tomorrow. We are opening up the topic on the fallout from revelations of unmarked graves found at residential schools in Canada and how heavy it is weighing on people there in Canada as well as here in the States. I'm Tara Gatewood. Thank you for joining us today. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow for this important conversation. And you can even start that conversation right now online. Visit us at NativeAmericaCalling.com. We're on Facebook Twitter, and Instagram. We'll meet you here tomorrow. I'm Tara Gatewood.
The Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention remind you, receiving the COVID-19 vaccination protects you, your family, and your community, and urge you to please contact your tribal or urban clinic to get your COVID-19 vaccination if you haven't already. More information at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus, who support this show.
Tadanas da se, din teski, din anelo huski, un doti, di dolski, ale a yelenuta nadega gushlai, higoli ya at insurekidsnow.gov, with tatlanoheta 1-877-543-7669, he agetanosa Medicare ale Medicaid unadoshka.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.